Today is Monday, July 6, 2026. And if you are listening to this right now, well, you are almost certainly getting ready to watch tomorrow's incredibly highly anticipated World Cup round of 16 match.
Oh yeah, everyone is.
Right. I mean, we're talking about the United States versus Belgium. It's a massive knockout fixture right here on American soil.
Huge stakes.
Exactly. But a storm of frankly unimaginable proportions has just erupted completely off the pitch.
Yeah, and it's threatening to overshadow literally every single thing that happens on the grass tomorrow.
Seriously.
Oh.
So let's just get straight to the bombshell news that just dropped.
Let's do it.
Fuller and Balogun, you know, the star striker for the U.S. men's national team, he received a direct red card in their final group stage match against Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Right.
And anyone who watches even a minute of football knows that a direct red card means an automatic suspension for the next match.
Always.
You are out. I mean, you sit in the
The
stands.
rules are absolute, or what they're supposed to be.
Right, except apparently today. Because following a direct phone call from Donald Trump to FIFA President Gianni Infantino,
Which is wild in itself.
totally wild, and a call that Trump publicly confirmed himself, by the way, on his social media platform, Truth Social. So following that call, FIFA has just suddenly suspended the punishment.
Yeah. Fuller and Blogan is lacing up his boots. He is playing tomorrow against Belgium.
It's just wow.
I know. The implications of this are staggering. I mean, we are looking at an institutional earthquake here that has really breached the very concept of an independent global sporting event.
And that right there is the entire mission of our deep dive today.
Exactly.
Because I want to be clear for you listening, this isn't a sports recap.
No.
We aren't here to break down overlapping fullbacks or, midfield formations or whatever. We are unpacking a huge stack of breaking news reports, internal legal documents, and really intense global reactions.
All to figure out how one single red card basically triggered the biggest administrative and geopolitical crisis of this 2026 World Cup.
Right. We need to look at the sporting reality, the legal paradox this creates, the political fallout, and honestly, the massive damage to FIFA's core institutions.
Because we're basically watching a real-time collision here between international geopolitics and the supposedly neutral governance of global sports.
Yeah.
And those two spheres usually go to great lengths to pretend the other doesn't even exist. But today, they crashed into each other in plain sight.
They really did. So let's start with the factual timeline on the pitch, because the sheer sequence of events is just wild.
It really is. Let's walk through it.
Okay, so the U.S. is playing Bosnia and Herzegovina. The stakes are already incredibly high just to get out of the group.
Right, that the tension is palpable.
And during the match, Balogun gets involved in this physical altercation on the pitch. The referee doesn't hesitate. I mean, it's a direct red card.
And we should clarify, not an accumulation of two yellows.
Right, good point.
This was a straight dismissal for serious foul play or violent conduct. And the moment that red piece of plastic goes into the air, a very specific, totally automated bureaucratic machine is supposed to click into gear.
Okay, actually break that machine down for a second. Because as fans, we just see the player walk down the tunnel and kind of assume the rest is magic.
Yeah, it's totally not magic. The mechanism is deeply ingrained in the tournament's rulebook.
Okay.
Basically, the match official submits their post-game report detailing exactly the nature of the red card. That report then goes to the FIFA disciplinary committee.
Right.
But for a standard direct red, there is virtually zero deliberation required regarding the immediate punishment. The player is automatically suspended for the subsequent match, period.
It's just a given.
Exactly. The committee might meet later, to decide if the infraction was so heinous that it warrants extending the suspension to maybe two or three matches.
Sure, like if someone really gets hurt.
Right. But that initial one-match ban is a structural guarantee. It's the absolute bedrock of consequence in the sport.
Okay, so the final whistle blows against Bosnia. The U.S. has advanced to the knockout rounds, which is great for them. But the reality is essentially set in stone at that point.
Or so everyone thought.
Right. Because on paper, they have lost their most potent attacking threat for the round of 16 match against Belgium. And honestly, that should have been the end of the narrative, right? Just another piece of World Cup adversity for a team to overcome.
Yeah. The standard avenue for recourse, if a national federation truly believes a severe miscarriage of justice has occurred.
Like a blatant case of mistaken identity or something.
Exactly, like the ref carded the wrong guy. If that happens, they file a formal grievance through established, highly opaque internal channels. They petition the disciplinary committee.
Right.
It happens behind closed doors. It takes days. And honestly, it almost never results in a straight red being overturned anyway.
Never. But the very next step in this specific timeline, well, it bypassed all of those traditional bureaucratic corridors completely.
It leaped straight onto the global diplomatic stage.
Yeah. Donald Trump took to Truth Social and just announced to the world that he personally intervened.
It's wild to even say out loud.
I know. He stated plainly in text that he got on the phone and contacted Gianni Infantino directly about this specific refereeing decision.
Which instantly transforms a refereeing controversy into a high-stakes diplomatic incident.
Right.
I mean, the president of the host nation of the World Cup publicly announcing he is putting pressure on the head of the tournament's governing body over a disciplinary ruling.
Yeah.
That is something we have just never seen at this level.
Never. And then, you know, the domino falls.
Yeah.
FIFA makes an official announcement regarding Bologan's status, but they didn't just issue a statement saying, we reviewed the tape, the referee made a horrible mistake, the red card is hereby erased.
No, they didn't do that at all.
They utilized a mechanism that is incredibly specific, highly technical, and frankly, deeply controversial.
Because this technicality is basically the hinge upon which this entire crisis swings. FIFA did not technically withdraw the red card. They didn't declare that the foul didn't happen. The card still legally exists in the tournament registry.
Okay.
Instead, they invoked something buried way down in the fine print. Article 27 of the FIFA Disciplinary Code.
Which honestly sounds like a cheat code.
It basically is.
So what does invoking Article 27 actually do in practice?
Okay, so by invoking Article 27, FIFA is allowed to stop the execution of the suspension.
Okay, so the red card stays.
Exactly. The red card remains administratively registered to Bologan.
Mm.
However, the punishment itself is placed under what the European legal analysts in our sources are translating as a profond constructi.
A probation construct.
Think as I say, it separates the infraction from the consequence. So the record reflects the crime, but the sentence is essentially suspended indefinitely, or, you know, at least until the tournament is over.
Okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around the practical application of this. It feels like, okay, it's like getting pulled over for doing 90 in a school zone.
Okay, I like this.
Right. The cop catches you dead to rights, writes you a really severe speeding ticket. And the normal automated consequence is that your license gets suspended right then and there. You can't drive.
Yep, you're off the road.
But then the mayor of the city makes a personal phone call to the traffic court judge.
Oh, man.
And the judge, he doesn't magically declare you weren't speeding. He doesn't rip up the ticket. It absolutely stays on your permanent driving record.
Right.
But because of that very specific phone call, the judge says, you know what? We just won't execute the suspension of your license today. Consider yourself on probation. And he just tosses you your keys back so you can drive in the big race the next morning.
That captures the absolute absurdity of the legal gymnastics here perfectly.
Mm.
Because the infraction is acknowledged by the governing body, the historical record reflects it, but the tangible consequence just evaporates into thin air exactly when it matters most.
Yeah.
FIFA gets to claim they didn't officially overrule the referee's judgment on the pitch.
Which they always want to avoid.
Right. They're desperately trying to protect the sanctity of their match officials.
Yeah.
But simultaneously, they're giving the U.S. government exactly what it wants.
See, I have to push back on FIFA's logic here, though, because this is a massive semantic trick.
Oh, completely.
Just think about it from the perspective of the opposing team.
Belgium.
Right, Belgium.
Hmm.
Administratively, FIFA can claim they didn't erase the card. But if Fuller and Bellegun's cleats are physically standing on the grass against them tomorrow, the fact that there is an administrative registration of a red card sitting in some filing cabinet in Zurich, I mean, that means absolutely nothing to the Belgian center backs who actually have to mark him for 90 minutes.
Obviously not.
Practically speaking, for the tournament, the card was entirely erased.
Yeah, the friction between the administrative claim and the practical reality is massive. You are completely right. For the Belgian national team, for the U.S. team, for the millions of fans watching, the functional reality is that the suspension has just vanished. And that administrative sleight of hand brings us crashing right back into the reality on the grass. The consequences of utilizing this obscure legal loophole, they do not stay in the boardroom.
No.
They are actively altering the reality of the World Cup right now.
So let's talk about that reality on the grass, starting with the absolute fury emanating from the Belgian camp right now.
Yeah.
We are talking about severe sporting chaos.
Yeah. To understand the depth of their anger here, you really have to understand how modern international football actually operates at this elite level.
Okay, break it down.
The preparation for a World Cup knockout match isn't just about going out and, you know, playing your hardest. It is a highly scientific, meticulously choreographed process.
Okay, put us in the room with the Belgian coaching staff over the last, say, 3 days.
They have spent endless hours in film study.
Right.
They have run specific tactical walkthroughs on the training pitch over and over.
Mm-hmm.
They have tailored their entire physical and mental preparation to face an American team that is explicitly missing its most dangerous dynamic striker. Football is a game of microscopic margins and spatial exploitation, right?
Right.
You structure your defensive line's height, your midfield pressing triggers, your transition patterns, all based on the exact personnel you anticipate facing.
Okay, so if Balogun is out, maybe Belgium plays a much higher defensive line because they just aren't terrified of his specific pace getting behind them on a quick counterattack.
Exactly.
Or maybe they commit an extra central midfielder forward into the attack because they don't have to worry about him poaching.
Precisely. They build a completely bespoke tactical architecture for that specific scenario.
Right.
And then, literally 24 hours before kickoff.
Oh, man.
After the final tactical sessions are closed, after the team shape is completely finalized, the news drops that the suspension is magically halted. He's playing.
It fundamentally annihilates days of meticulous preparation.
Completely ruins it.
The Belgian Football Association actually released a statement, and the terminology they used was really striking to me. They didn't just call this unfair, frustrating, you know, standard coach speak. They called it an attack on the level playing field.
And that phrasing is heavily, heavily loaded in sports law.
How so?
An attack on the level playing field is an indictment of the structural integrity of the competition itself.
Okay.
They aren't just complaining about having to defend a good player. They are formally arguing that the foundational conditions of the tournament have been artificially and deliberately manipulated at the 11th hour by an outside force.
Which really exposes the deeper damage here. Because we move from the sporting chaos on the pitch to the underlying legal paradox this creates for the entire tournament.
If you zoom out and look at how global sports govern themselves, this is exactly where the foundation starts actively cracking.
Right.
Because the entire historical precedent of football disciplinary action relies on rigidity.
Rigidity.
Yeah. A red card equals an automatic suspension. No endless appeals court, no arbitration delays. You see red, you walk.
Which is, it's starkly different from American sports.
Very different.
Like in the NFL, player might get flagged on a Sunday, fined on a Tuesday, and then they enter this protracted arbitration process that drags on for weeks while they just continue to play.
Exactly.
But in football, the punishment is immediate and final.
And that rigidity is not an accident. It is a deliberate design choice to create what European legal analysts in our sources call Rechtssicherheit. You know, legal certainty.
Legal certainty. Let's unpack how vital that concept actually is in the context of a massive 48-team mega tournament.
Legal certainty means that every single participating nation, regardless of their geopolitical power, operates under the exact same predictable set of consequences.
Okay, so equal treatment.
Right. It means if a player from the heavily favored host nation gets a red card, he sits. It also means if a player from a tiny federation like New Zealand or Costa Rica gets a red card, he sits.
The rules are blind to the jersey you're wearing.
Exactly. You desperately need that absolute, unyielding certainty so that the tournament functions fairly. Without it, you don't really have a competition. You just have an exhibition.
So the existential question being posed by legal analysts right now is, if Article 27 can simply be pulled out of a hat by the FIFA president to override the automatic rules whenever he gets a high-profile phone call, why do the automatic rules even exist in the first place?
That is the terrifying question for FIFA right now.
Yeah.
If the rules are only absolute until they become politically inconvenient, then you don't actually have a rule of law. You have a series of suggestions that are enforced subjectively based on leverage.
Wow.
And the moment that subjectivity is introduced, it destroys legal certainty for the other 47 teams.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate here on behalf of a listener who might be thinking, look, we've all watched football. We've all seen referees make completely horrendous game-ruining decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. We've all screamed at the TV when a totally soft red card destroys a beautiful match. So couldn't you argue that having a backdoor loophole like Article 27 is actually a good thing?
Yeah.
Doesn't it allow the governing body to step in, use common sense, and fix a genuinely bad call so the best players actually stay on the pitch? Like, doesn't the ultimate pursuit of justice matter more than clinging to a rigid, flawed process?
It's a very compelling emotional argument. It really
yeah.
is. And it's exactly the defense you will hear from supporters of this decision.
Right.
But the counterargument from sports law experts is absolute.
Right.
The primary issue here isn't actually whether the original card given to Ballin was too harsh.
It isn't.
No. The foul might have been a yellow. It might have been a soft red. That is almost irrelevant now. The issue is that overturning it in this specific, opaque manner completely abandons the established legal process.
But why does the manner of the overturn matter more than the outcome? If justice is served, isn't that what counts?
Because if the genuine goal of a governing body is to correct refereeing errors and ensure justice, you build a transparent, universal, and equally accessible appeals process.
Yeah.
You create a system where every single team can submit video evidence to an independent panel.
Right, a system that exists in the daylight. For everyone.
Exactly. But that isn't what happened here. Ask yourself this. If a player from Senegal gets a controversial red card next week, can the president of Senegal call Gianni Infantino on his personal cell phone, post about it on social media, and get Article 27 invoked within 24 hours?
Oh, almost certainly not. I mean, they just don't have the leverage.
No, they don't. And when justice is applied ad hoc, based on obscure legal loopholes and back-channel diplomatic pressure rather than universally available mechanisms, it fundamentally ceases to be justice.
It becomes blatant favoritism.
Exactly. In a global tournament, ad hoc justice for the powerful is far more dangerous to the long-term integrity of the sport than an occasional human error by a referee on the pitch.
That's a huge point.
A bad refereeing call is a localized mistake, right? But overturning it via opaque political pressure is a systemic, catastrophic failure of governance.
That distinction is chilling, honestly. And it perfectly explains why the reaction to this event has been so violently polarized.
Yes.
Because the legal foundation has been shaken, this is no longer just a squabble between U.S. soccer and the Belgian FA.
No, not at all.
This has triggered a massive, fractured global response. The international football community is basically splitting right down the middle based entirely on geography and perspective.
We are literally seeing two completely different realities being constructed around the exact same administrative action.
Okay, let's lay out these differing perspectives based purely on the reporting and our sources, staying completely impartial here.
Right.
So domestically, within the United States, the reaction is one of overwhelming satisfaction and vindication. U.S. soccer is thrilled. I mean, they get their talismanic striker back for the biggest match of the four-year cycle.
The tactical relief for their coaching staff is immense.
We even have quotes from the U.S. men's national team coach, Mauricio Pochettino. He is publicly framing this decision as restoration of justice.
Which leans right into that devil's advocate argument you brought up.
Exactly.
From their internal perspective, a harsh red card has been righted, and the integrity of the match against Belgium has been saved by ensuring the best players are available.
It is highly notable, though, what Pochettino is deliberately not saying.
Yes, very notable.
He is explicitly refusing to engage with any questions from the press regarding the alleged political interference.
Right, he's avoiding it entirely.
He is maintaining a strictly sporting focus. Furthermore, a large segment of the American fan base feels that the original tackle against Bosnia was never a red card to begin with.
True.
So in their eyes, the orthodox process failed them, so an unorthodox correction is perfectly acceptable.
So the domestic lens is entirely focused on the ends justifying the means, right? Balogun is on the pitch, justice is served, end of story.
But the moment you cross the Atlantic, the narrative completely inverts.
Oh, 100%.
The international outrage is blistering. We already mentioned Belgium's furious reaction, expressing extreme surprise, exploring potential legal steps to even halt the match, and demanding the protection of the tournament's integrity.
Yeah.
They are operating under the firm belief that FIFA has blatantly violated its own rulebook just to appease a host nation.
And if it were just Belgium complaining, FIFA might just put their heads down and weather the storm.
Right.
Governing bodies are used to angry opponents. Mm. But the crisis is escalating because massive, uninvolved powerhouse nations are stepping into the fray.
Okay, give me an example.
Look at Germany.
Germany?
Yeah, the German Football Association, the DFB, has officially weighed in with heavy artillery.
Now, the German involvement is fascinating because they have absolutely no dog in tomorrow's fight.
None at all.
They aren't playing the U.S. They are on a different side of the bracket entirely. Yet, the DFB has officially, publicly demanded that FIFA quickly and transparently explain exactly how this Article 27 decision was reached.
Yeah. And why Germany? Why are they the ones throwing their weight around here?
Right. Why?
Because the German footballing culture is deeply, deeply rooted in structuralism and bureaucratic order.
Ah, okay.
They recognize that if a precedent is allowed to stand where a head of state can override a suspension without transparent legal justification, the entire architecture of the tournament is compromised.
They see the big picture.
Exactly. The DFB's demand is specifically designed to force FIFA to dispel the stench of political interference. They are basically asking the terrifying question out loud. If the rules don't apply to the United States today, do they apply to us tomorrow?
And that profound anxiety is just echoing across the global media landscape right now. The vocabulary being deployed by international outlets, I mean, from broadsheets in London to sports dailies in Madrid and Buenos Aires, it's intense.
Very intense.
They are universally using phrases like unprecedented, extraordinary, highly controversial.
Yeah.
They are blatantly calling it political intervention and warning of terminal threats to the integrity of football.
And those are heavy, legacy-defining words.
Oh, like heavy.
Major international sports desks do not throw around accusations of political intervention lightly. It indicates a rock-solid consensus outside the United States that a fundamental boundary has been crossed here.
It is genuinely remarkable. The invoking of Article 27 is viewed as a triumph of common sense and justice in one hemisphere and a corrupt authoritarian political intervention in the other.
It really proves that in international sports governance, truth is entirely dictated by where you are standing when the earthquake hits.
Which forces us to examine the epicenter of that earthquake. We cannot fully understand this crisis without looking directly at the two men driving it.
Exactly. Because the international media is screaming political intervention, we must transition to the political and institutional level.
Right.
We have to analyze the roles of Donald Trump and Gianni Infantino and what this specific incident means for their respective institutions.
This is where the story stops being about a football tournament and starts being a masterclass in geopolitical leverage. Because we have extensive reports indicating severe extra-legal pressure emanating from the U.S. government toward FIFA headquarters, which culminated in Trump publicly thanking FIFA on Truth Social for making the right call.
So let's break this down impartially, looking at the political utility for Donald Trump first. This intervention carries dual interpretations that are heavily dependent on who is reading the post.
Okay, so domestically, among his political base, this is viewed as a massive, unequivocal win.
Huge win.
It fits seamlessly into a very specific political narrative. The framing is that of a strong, decisive leader standing up for American interests.
Okay. Yep.
It projects the image of a president who is willing to cut through corrupt international bureaucracy and European red tape to ensure American stars are treated fairly and allowed to shine on home soil.
Yep.
It is a total flex of national power on the global stage, proving that America dictates terms.
That is the immense domestic utility of the move. It plays incredibly well to that base. But internationally, the interpretation is entirely inverted. Across Europe, South America, and Africa, this is viewed strictly as heavy-handed, unwanted political interference in what is universally understood to be an independent, neutral sporting competition.
It looks like bullying to them.
Exactly. It looks like bullying.
So you have two completely opposing realities existing simultaneously, burst from the exact same social media post.
Yes. And while a politician is uniquely equipped to navigate and even exploit polarized interpretations like that, the leader of a supposedly neutral international sports body absolutely cannot afford that luxury.
Right, which brings us to the profound institutional crisis facing Gianni Infantino and FIFA.
Let's zero in on FIFA's historical defense mechanisms here.
Okay.
For generations, through countless scandals, FIFA has managed to shield itself from on-pitch controversy by hiding behind one ultimate unshakable principle: the referee decides.
That's their golden rule.
It is the shield that protects all those executives in Zurich. The referee is the ultimate, unquestionable arbiter of truth on the pitch. Even with the introduction of video assistant referees, VAR, the final decision always rests with the human official in the stadium.
Right.
And this principle exists specifically to protect FIFA headquarters from having to relitigate every single controversial tackle, handball, and offside call of a month-long tournament.
But by utilizing Article 27 in this manner today, that shield has been completely shattered.
Completely.
The new question hanging over the tournament is terrifying for them. Does the disciplinary committee actually decide, or does political pressure decide?
And that question strikes at the absolute core of Gianni Infantino's vulnerability in this moment.
Yeah.
Because let's return to the devil's advocate argument for a second. Let's pretend that the use of Article 27 was legally defensible in a vacuum. Let's say a secret panel of lawyers looked at the foul and genuinely believed the red card was too harsh.
Okay, giving them the ultimate benefit of the doubt.
Right. Even if that were true, the glaring, inescapable question remains regarding the optics.
Why apply it right now?
Precisely. Why this specific player? Why for this specific knockout match? And most damningly, why was the decision finalized only after a publicized phone call from a world leader?
The timing is impossible to untangle from the politics.
Impossible.
If FIFA had quietly invoked Article 27 based purely on an internal review, say, 24 hours after the match, before any politician got involved, well, it would have been highly controversial and debated by pundits, but it would have just been a sporting controversy.
Exactly.
The fact that the sequence of events involves a public demand from a head of state, followed immediately by capitulation from FIFA, changes the math entirely.
And the analytical point here is crucial for understanding institutional trust. Without a transparent, highly detailed, publicly released legal motivation explaining exactly why they did this, the speculation about political influence will never fade away.
Never.
It will permanently taint FIFA's credibility for a generation. And in the realm of global governance, the perception of corruption or undue influence is often just as damaging as the reality of it.
Absolutely. Because if the global audience believes that Infantino bowed to political pressure from the host nation, FIFA's moral and administrative authority is hollowed out instantly, regardless of the actual legal mechanics they utilize.
Which means FIFA is basically staring down the barrel of an absolute credibility death spiral.
Yeah.
Just hours before one of their marquee knockout matches is set to kick off.
Yeah.
The integrity of the 2026 World Cup is actively, visibly unraveling.
So the obvious question is, can it be saved? And how?
Right.
Which brings us to the roadmap for resolution. Because it's not enough for us to just sit here and admire the wreckage. We need to look at how experts in international sports law believe this can actually be fixed.
The source material provides a very structured, methodical five-step solution proposed by governance experts to pull FIFA out of this specific crisis and restore some semblance of trust.
Okay, let's break down these five steps, because I really want to discuss the feasibility and the actual impact of each one. The first step proposed is full legal disclosure.
Right. The experts argue that FIFA must immediately publish the juridical motivation behind their decision.
Okay.
They cannot simply release a PR statement saying, you know, we have elected to use Article 27. They need to publish the actual legal briefs. They need to explain exactly why Article 27 was applicable in this specific instance and what explicit legal criteria were met to justify stopping the execution of a mandatory suspension.
So it's the difference between a judge just banging a gavel and shouting guilty versus releasing a 40-page written verdict that outlines all the legal precedents and reasoning.
Yes.
They basically need to show their math to the world.
Exactly. If the legal math holds up to scrutiny by outside experts, well, it at least provides a foundation for a defense. It proves they followed a process.
Right.
But if they refuse to show the math, the global assumption will cement into fact. There is no legal foundation, only political capitulation.
Okay, so step two moves from the paperwork to the people involved, procedural transparency.
This goes beyond the legal justification and demands accountability regarding the human element of the decision-making process.
Okay.
The experts demand that FIFA reveal who exactly made this call.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Was it a unanimous, blind vote by a fully convened disciplinary subcommittee? Or was it a unilateral executive decree issued directly from Infantino's office? And based on what specific documents or video evidence did they make this call?
This feels massive.
It is.
Because if it comes out through leaks that the standard disciplinary committee was bypassed entirely, or that their initial ruling to uphold the suspension was overruled by executive order following the phone call, the institutional damage is catastrophic.
Devastating.
They have to prove a legitimate process was followed.
Right. Step three looks further down the timeline, anticipating the fallout after the trophy is finally lifted.
Yeah.
Independent evaluation.
Right. The proposal is for a comprehensive post-World Cup review conducted by a committee completely unconnected to FIFA, the United States Soccer Federation, or the Belgian FA.
This is a classic heavy-duty crisis management tool used by massive organizations when internal trust is just gone.
Yeah.
You bring in outside auditors, perhaps former judges from the Court of Arbitration for Sport,
mm-hmm.
or independent ethics investigators. You grant them full access to the timeline of events, the communication logs, the internal memos, and you have them publish an unvarnished public report.
And the key is that they are independent.
The operative word is definitely unconnected. Any internal FIPA investigation will carry zero weight with the global public at this point. Nobody would believe it.
It's essentially a Truth and Reconciliation Commission for a football tournament.
That is exactly what it is.
Well,
a mechanism to publicly air all the dirty laundry in order to move forward.
Okay, step four is preventative. It's about changing the rule book. Rule adjustment.
The experts argue that if Article 27 is going to remain on the books as an exception clause, its language must be explicitly rewritten.
So no more loopholes.
Right. The vague probation constructs that allow for endless subjective interpretation must be eliminated.
So no more legal gray areas that can be interpreted however the powers that be want in the heat of a high-stakes moment.
The goal is to prevent the arbitrary use of the rule in the future, and just as importantly, to prevent the appearance of arbitrary favoritism.
Right.
If the rule explicitly states, for example, the execution of a suspension may only be halted in cases of proven mistaken identity confirmed by VAR, then a subjective political situation like Balogun's could literally never happen again. The parameters would be completely closed.
I see. And finally, step five, which honestly feels like the biggest hurdle to me, a new code of conduct.
This is arguably the most important step for the long-term survival of international sports. But you're right, it's incredibly difficult to actually enforce.
Yeah.
The experts are calling for the establishment of rigid, transparent rules regarding communications between political leaders and sports administrators during international tournaments.
The ultimate goal being to protect the independence of these sports organizations from the immense crushing weight of geopolitical influence.
It would theoretically create a protocol where if a head of state, whether it's the U.S. president or the French prime minister, calls the FIFA president during a tournament regarding a sporting matter.
Yeah.
That call is immediately logged. The contents are made public, and the FIFA president is legally recused from any disciplinary proceedings related to that nation.
Wow.
It builds a literal firewall between politics and the pitch.
Okay. I hear these five steps. Full disclosure, transparency, independent audits, rewritten rules, new codes of conduct.
Right.
And I will admit, they sound absolutely brilliant if you are writing a textbook on the utopian future of international sports governance.
I hear a but coming.
But I have to push back with a massive reality check here.
What's the reality check?
These are all fantastic, well-thought-out, long-term institutional fixes.
Sure.
They might save the 2030 World Cup in Spain and Morocco. They might save the integrity of the game 10 years from now.
Okay.
But will literally any of this actually help Belgium tomorrow night? I mean, it feels like we are meticulously designing a beautiful, impenetrable lock for the barn door after the horse hasn't just bolted, but has already run down the street and won the race.
That's a fair point.
Fuller and Balogun is going to lace up his boots tomorrow. He's going to walk out of that tunnel. The Belgian defenders still have to figure out how to stop him. Isn't this entire five-step roadmap just an academic exercise at this point?
You've hit on the immediate tragedy of this situation, specifically for the Belgian national team. You are entirely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely none of these five steps will change the reality on the pitch tomorrow.
Right.
The immediate sporting damage to the integrity of this specific round of 16 match is completely irreversible. Belgium has been permanently disadvantaged by a shifting rulebook.
So what is the point of debating these five steps if the game is already compromised? Why do it?
Because if we connect this isolated incident to the bigger picture of global sports, this is no longer a debate about whether a tackle on the pitch against Bosnia was too aggressive.
Okay.
As the experts synthesize in their final assessments, this has fundamentally morphed into an existential crisis regarding the credibility, transparency, and actual survival of FIFA's entire decision-making apparatus.
So the process itself is now on trial, not just the player.
Exactly. The administrative process is being judged by the world just as harshly as the outcome of the match will be. These five steps aren't about saving tomorrow's game. That game is already tainted.
Yeah.
These steps are about saving the very concept of the World Cup.
Wow.
Because if FIFA doesn't urgently implement these transparency measures, the loss of trust won't just stay isolated to this one U.S.-Belgium fixture.
Where does it go?
It will bleed into every single match, every single refereeing decision, every single VAR review for the rest of this tournament, and every tournament that follows. Every time a close call goes in favor of a powerful nation, the entire world will ask, who made a phone call?
Man.
Trust is the only currency a sports league actually has, and they are currently just burning it.
Which brings us to the core of why this matters. What does this all mean for you, the listener? Why should you care about the arcane details of a red card technicality or the translation of a Dutch legal term like a probation construct, even if you don't follow soccer at all?
Because the dynamics at play here transcend the sport completely.
Exactly. What we are witnessing right now, playing out in real time on our timelines and television screens, is a fascinating high-stakes case study in what happens when the immense gravitational pull of global geopolitical power crashes headlong into a supposedly neutral, independent organization.
It is the ultimate stress test of institutional integrity. Can a global governing body withstand the direct public pressure of a superpower? And if it bends, if it rewrites its own reality to accommodate that power, what are the cascading consequences for the rest of the world that relies on those rules being fair? It's literally a microcosm of global politics playing out on a 100-yard patch of grass.
It genuinely makes you look at those crisp white lines on the pitch entirely differently. They aren't a sanctuary anymore.
No.
The outside world has definitively breached the perimeter, which leaves us with a final, rather provocative thought to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive.
If we extrapolate out based on the precedents being set today.
Right. Think about the future. If a simple phone call and a quick social media post from a world leader can successfully utilize a vague legal loophole to completely alter the roster of a World Cup knockout match today, what happens at the next World Cup?
It actively opens Pandora's box for every future tournament.
It really does, because every other world leader is watching this happen right now.
Yep.
If multiple rival nations with immense global power realize that this backdoor exists and that FIFA is susceptible to pressure, if they decide to start flexing their own political muscles over penalty kicks, offside calls, and yellow cards,
Scary thought.
are we entering an era where the real referees are no longer the men and women running on the grass with a whistle?
Yeah.
Are the true arbiters of the game going to be lawyers, diplomats, and politicians sitting in capital cities negotiating the outcomes of sporting events in back rooms before a ball is even kicked?
That is the very real existential threat hanging over the beautiful game right now.
Yeah.
The illusion of independence has been totally shattered.
Keep all of that in mind when the whistle blows tomorrow. Enjoy the game if you still can.